Hello, you're listening to Spoiler
Filled
Film
Conversation.
Hooray!
Woohoo! Ooh, for a moment there, you slipped back into puberty. Are you alright?
Just a bit tired. Nothing to worry about. Carry on.
Right, so I'm Richard Nicholas. Hello. Those other two are Anthony Evans.
Hello.
And Abigail Bain.
Hello.
And we, together with another member usually, form a spoiler-filled film conversation, hooray. And this is our podcast. It's about chatting about films. So, this week we will be chatting about the film The Prophecy. And it is important to get this one right, because there are other things called The Prophecy or Prophecy. So Anthony is going to clarify by probably reading out some stuff off the internet.
Yes, pretty much. The Prophecy is from 1995, and it follows ex-priest come detective Thomas Daggett as he becomes embroiled in a plot which sees the Archangel Gabriel descend to Earth in search of a special soul in order to strengthen his power in heaven. It was written and directed by Gregory Wyden, who has also written the screenplay for Highlander. Very good. And the film also stars Elias Koteas, Virginia Madsen, Eric Stoltz, Viggo Mortensen, Adam Goldberg, Steve Heitner, Mariah Shining Dove Snyder,
wow.
Great name, and of course the ever brilliant Christopher Walken.
That Shining Dove name is like a wrestler name. It's so like how is she even named that? it's like a Marvel character or something. It's crazy. Anyway, let's leave the listener and us wondering. I wonder if she flights the Black Canary in issue 33 of the Green Arrow. Needless pop culture reference aside, why, Anthony, did you present us with The Prophecy? Other than, you know, duh, it's got Christopher Walken in. Why wouldn't we want to watch it?
Of course. Well, I have to admit, that's probably the reason, the big reason that I chose it was I just needed a bit of Christopher Walken in my life. So here he is. I don't know, this film is kind of, if you were to like take an out of context Christopher Walken moments thing, I'm pretty sure they would all come from this film.
Well, he's got a catalogue to choose from for out of context moments, the way you can't even begin to grasp why he said or did whatever he did. But this, you know, it definitely has some choice bits to feature in a montage like you're talking about.
Oh, definitely. And just generally highlights all of his things.
Highlights all his
quirks, shall we say.
His quirks, right. It's heavily about Catholicism and angels and stuff. How does that, you know, are you, for listeners, are you a big Catholic? Are you obsessed with hell and damnation? Or is it just, you know,
that's
you explain?
Right. I'm a big fat Catholic. No, I'm not particularly religious. I'm not religious in any way, I suppose.
I got some beliefs, but they of a religious kind.
I don't know, but the kind of mythology of angels has always kind of fascinated me, I suppose. And this came out in like 1995, and there was like a big kind of string of angel, devil, god related kind of mystery movies like this. Mm. Kind of like Dogma, more of a comedy, but there was stuff like Stigmata and End of Days. Mm. And whilst not all of them are great films per se, I always kind of remembered them. And they came out when I was like, 13, 14. And I don't know, they kind of always stuck with me. And this is what I missed from back then. So I wanted to kind of, see what it's about. See how it fitted in with all the other ones.
Abby, what were you expecting from the film?
Pretty much the only thing I knew about it was the cover, which is a really extreme close-up of Christopher Walken's face and his big green eye.
Mm.
And then next to that is the trailer where there's a sort of angry, scared-looking woman with a gun. Hmm. So that's all I had to go on.
Right, and were you like, yeah, or hmm?
Well, I'm not nuts about things that are about religion. So when I heard it was about that, I was a bit meh. But it's Christopher Walken, so sort of I came in neutral because various factors neutralised each other.
Christopher Walken, yay! Stuff about religion, not so much.
Yeah,
I think similar to you, Abby. I'm often put off by stuff that's going. We're going to take the Bible and Catholicism and stuff and reveal more demoned dark stuff about it and show you the true stuff that is evil and scary and, you know. Like, I'm not a big fan of horrifying the Bible or, fantasy Bible ideas because the Bible is already kind of insane. So for people to write their own fan fiction based on the cool ideas in the Bible, you know, like, it's slightly worrying to me. But I think Christopher Walken is always just... I mean, there's some really, really terrible films he's in, and he doesn't save them. Like, some people think, oh, I love Christopher Walken, he saves bad movies, and I think he hasn't got that power. So, I mean, I'm thinking of
you,
one...
Kiss Toledo Goodbye,
which was a real bad out-of-the-bargain-bucket choice that me and Abby picked up and watched, and I just can't recommend that. Terrible film. But Chris Walken, I do enjoy. He's a comic genius, and occasionally, you know, he can nail, you know, proper atmospheric acting. But I expected this to not be my cup of tea, because I'm not in a kind of Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of person. Not that this is about vampires, it's about angels, but that's the same similar thing, isn't it? Just sort of dark things that are up to no good. So, you know, there you go. For whatever it's worth, wasn't keyed up for enjoyment particularly, but can enjoy Walken. So, we watched the film. We've digested it. We watched it a couple times now, I think. Initially, we tried to do this podcast and that we didn't all remember it properly and, you know, whatever. We've watched it twice, all of us now, so we're properly, you know, on top of, I hope. I can't remember.
This is as good as it gets, guys.
Still 100% if I followed it all, but I did get lost at times. I was like, what the heck? Like, what's this going on? The devil's here now? Oh, God, what is this? But, you know, we've digested it twice, and like a cow. My God. Right, the point is, we've all watched it, and it is about, as Anthony sort of said in the blurb, but I didn't think that was a particularly... Like, did you read that blurb? Or did you come up with it?
I came up with it.
I didn't take away the same.
I don't like giving too much away in the sum ups.
Sure.
So I just kind of focus on the main kind of plot thread.
Because I was thinking when you said it, I was like, "Is that what happened?" Because all I saw was a bunch of weird men who were angels making out with corpses and children, and then behaving very strangely.
I think it might be a little bit of a case of. Our kind of main protagonist, played by Elias Cotiers, that's Thomas, is next to all the other things and characters going on, just a little bit bland.
He is, because he's this is the thing, it's about a priest. I like priests, I find them intriguing in pop culture, a little bit worrying in real life. but priests... it starts about this guy Thomas is getting ordained as a priest, and he has a bit of a weird, weird fit of a vision, and he gets lots of disturbing imagery that freaks him out in the church, and we show him years later having not become a priest, but he's in fact a cop, and he's on a rooftop smoking and disregarding the rules and stuff, and so it's a nearly priest turned cop who's given up on religion because, scary visions, and is investigating a weird crime, which seems to be between angels or something. There's a war in heaven in the film that we don't see, but it gets shown. Focus in on the heaven war in heaven thing. It's about the angels that were on Earth meddling in human affairs. For their own means. That's the general idea, is there's angels on Earth, a few of them, and they're kind of fighting to find the spirit of the most evil man ever. And they're all out to get that soul, and it involves this cop priest. That's the thing, isn't it? That's the idea.
That's the gist, yeah. Got it.
it sounds kind of cool, but I didn't. Like the guy who plays Thomas, Abby, me and you saw him recently in the film Defendor.
Yes, we did. He was quite good in that.
Yeah, it's just a bad cop. You're inferring he was not good in this film, though. Anthony's already said he's bland, but...
My problem with this movie is the direction. And it's... The story was okay. The script was all right. It needed some polishing, and it didn't get that. And I think with the acting, I don't think they got a lot of direction to help them through it. Because the stuff they're talking about isn't, like, you can't draw on your own experience for what you're about to do.
Yeah.
They actually have to be like, okay, be scared, be this, be that, be that, be this. And they just didn't get it. So I don't blame that guy for not doing very well.
There was one person who stood out as a quality hand, and it might surprise you, but it was the guy who plays the mortician. Is that the right word? The guy in the morgue who has to analyse the...
Yeah, I think so. Mortician...
Forensics guy.
Guy, whoever he was.
Yeah, I thought he was... He had to do a lot of the explaining of why it's a weird case that this the corpse of a demon or angel thing has turned up. And he had all these weird things about him that was made him such a strange phenomenon. And even though they should have been instantly calling the press and going, we found a miracle man who has plague from the 40 thieves... Like, his disease is from way back in the 40 Thieves time, which is very hard to say that, and he has weird bones that mean he's like a baby, and he doesn't have eyes, and, like, he's this creepy corpse, and he's, like, a some kind of insane miracle. So he should have been like, this is the most insane thing I've seen. But he was very charming in the way he explained things and talked to this cop about a weird corpse. I liked him. I thought he was a charismatic, well-played character. And on top of that, maybe Christopher Walken was probably having fun being weird. He had some good.
Oh, clearly, yeah.
He had some good moments, and those are the two I thought you guys are doing a good job. So those were everyone else, I got some questions about, but you know.
I liked. I have to say, like, I think Viggo Mortensen stood out as well as kind of Lucifer,
chomping on hearts and being
towards the end. Towards the end, he got a bit over the top, but then. Everything got a bit over the top at the end, so I'll forgive him for that. But he's very just really memorable and just plays the part really well. Like, he's both weirdly charismatic, but then he's also disgustingly vulgar as well.
He's got my favourite joke.
Go on.
Which is when you say, oh, I used to love to listen to you praying, and you used to wear us under the bed, and I was!
That's right, kids. Satan is under your bed, and if you're praying to God, Satan can hear you.
It's especially good if you just imagine Viggo Mortensen lying under his bed.
Oh, changes it entirely. He comes in right at the end as well. He's not a big part. It's just that, like, final act, let's get Satan involved. Like, that whole thing.
Saying that, though, it is a bit weird. Do you remember why he was there?
I think the reason,
really?
I think the reason he gave was Gabriel, which is Christopher Walken's character. Gabriel is kind of like a bad guy in this, even though you think, oh, Gabriel, he's a good angel. But Gabriel's got some beefs with God, and he's basically like Lucifer 2. Bagel? Lucifer 2. Lucifer 2, Gabriel gone bad. I'm like Lucifer now. I hate God and want to make a hell on Earth or something. Or I hate humans suddenly. But his... Gabriel is... I forget why I'm mentioning him now. He is going to create a... He wants to ruin the plans of mice and men and God. And that will create two hells. One in heaven and one in hell. And Lucifer's like, can't have two hells. That spoils my gig. Like, so I think that's why Lucifer is brought in at the end. So he can be like, yeah. You can't have that, mate.
And yeah, that's why. It's just... That's kind of... That's just one of his sentences that he says, and, like, pretty much everything else is kind of, what are you trying to say? And, like, just a bit, I suppose that's how the devil would be, just all tricky and stuff.
The angels in this are quite irritating, though, because they don't ever talk plain. Like, Eric Stoltz at the beginning is like, you answer one question, any question, just pick one.
I know. Like, is this the ginger guy? Is this Simon, ginger guy from Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, that's right.
When he's the first supernatural being that the cop encounters, and he does that really wanky thing that only happens in films, where like a cop who lives in reality and doesn't know what angels are comes in and is like, "Who are you?" pulls a gun out, and is like this strange guy, and there's two things. One, why the fuck is everyone perching? All the angels perch like crows on chairs and on anything. They just perch.
Yeah, it was really odd, just odd looking. But then it kind of goes with one of the things that I like is just I think they kind of capture during the whole film the kind of oddness, just the slight kind of weird oddness of angels.
Yeah, because angels, you know, hang about watching over humans. And that means they all behave like gargoyles, just like all of the time. So weird. But the main thing that Abby has already, you know, sort of talked about a bit there is he starts talking a load of rubbish, knowing rubbish about the quandary in heaven. Like he knows there's a war in heaven, and he starts blathering to this cop who doesn't know who he is. Loads of in stuff about the Bible and when this guy had a prophecy, and you know, like basically when this cop was becoming a priest, he has that weird vision, and he starts talking about that, and the guy's like, "Who are you? What are you doing?" And he's like, blah, 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 "I'm not going to listen to you. I'm just going to let you hold a gun to me." And I hate that. What? Like, just say, "Hello, you might not believe me. My name's Simon. Put down your gun. It's going to be a bit implausible, but let me tell you some stuff about you, and I'll prove I'm an angel." There we go, right? That's what he could have done.
He could have.
But instead, right?
It's all talking mysterious metaphors.
That you couldn't, even if you knew what he was on about, you wouldn't be up to speed straight away. You'd be like, "Huh? Oh, you know about my past. That's weird. What are you talking about?" the ginger guy is kind of the crucial starter of the plot, because he's there, I guess, because he knows that the war in heaven is getting serious and that Gabriel is after...
Yeah, well, I think he has discovered where this kind of... The world's most evil soul is residing.
They've sort of done... It's their equivalent to the action movie where someone wants, like, the biggest, baddest weapon. The nuclear bomb or the... whatever it is. They need the soul because apparently he can be a general and win the war.
Yeah, like, it doesn't make sense. This is one of the things that doesn't make sense, is they have this high concept of, it's quite hard to get your head around the idea of warring angels, the concept of a Christian God ruling the world and not caring about angels but caring about man because he gave them souls. It's all a bit hard. Like, people have, I don't know if you guys know, but people have arguments about this stuff all the time. like Catholicism, religion, and why we're here. But the film tries to do that and say, we also have a war that can only be won by an evil guy on Earth. And it's just like, why do the angels hate each other, like, are warring for the love of God or something, but they can't war enough because they're not evil enough, so they need humanity. They need an evil guy's soul to...
Yeah. I think it explained it something like, just the mere fact that like a dark soul has gotten into heaven has just kind of like screwed everything over because that should never happen.
Something
like that. So
it's a very MacGuffin-y, and I don't think the guy is that. They kind of suggest this guy was in a war. Was it like a soldier?
The Korean War, I think. Yeah. It was.
And he cut off faces and put people on stakes and had some. I can't remember the full extent of this guy's evilness.
He was accused of cannibalism.
Right.
Yeah. I think it only kind of gives you a little taste.
Okay.
Because that's like only his kind of like weird atrocities. During the Korean War.
Yeah.
It just gives you like a little taste. And I think for that little taste, it was quite effective.
Yeah, but when you consider people like Hitler, you know, you kind of go, I don't know. I think there's been. I think you could. Maybe there's a prequel to the prophecy where they go. Gabriel is trying to get Hitler his soul, but is thwarted by some other angel or something. I don't know. Whatever. I didn't buy that this general was all that threatening.
Yeah, apparently.
And we only see him as a corpse, so it's very hard to be threatening and dead.
Or a young Native American girl.
That's true, he was, his soul was embodied. Yeah, we'll get to that. So, anyway, that's the MacGuffin that Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, who you might know from biblical mythology or whatever, or factology, he is bad in this and is annoyed with God because God loves humans, which is a common thing of angel-demon movies, right? Like, the angels are a bit miffed at God because he loves humans more. Mm. And angels were made first. And Gabriel wants to sort that out somehow with a war, which he will win with a soul. But the first clash, really, we see, which is ridiculous, is Ginger Guy from Pulp Fiction is sort of wandering about in an apartment, and some weird, like, black-eyed dude who looks like he's an Ozzy Osbourne fan turns up in his cool Matrix clothes, perches briefly, before bursting in a window, and then the ginger guy from Pulp Fiction goes, "I know he's coming, I'll jump at him as well, and we'll fight violently and briefly before I impale him on some glass, throw him out a window of the high apartment." And then the weirdest thing for me, aside from all this bizarre mythology, Bible stuff, is for some reason a car driving down an alley very fast smashes into the angel demon guy and kills him even more. And it's like, what? Who's driving straight down an alley at that speed?
That's a dead end as well.
And then when a guy falls out of a window, they don't particularly brake. We don't find out who's driving the car. I don't really get why a car crash happened at the end of a very brief violent fight. Any thoughts, guys?
Nope.
Baffling.
Got to shock us somehow.
Fucking druggies.
Hippies with their cars. Whatever. It gives us a demon angel corpse. I guess he's an angel fighting for Gabriel or something, or one of the people involved in the heavenly war. And he's dead. He's all weird looking because he's got weird black blood and he's mangled up and has two genitals and loads of weird angel things that the autopsy guy, who I like, has to go, this is a weird guy. He had this weird Bible on him that's all in Latin. Here you go, priest cop, you have a read of that. See what you make of these extra testaments in the Bible that give all the plot some texture. And off you go. You know, that's the kind of start of the mystery, is why is this guy so weird? What's this crap about extra information about warriors who will come and save, who will fight in a second war in heaven? Oh, some weird stuff. What did you guys make of this mystery of the fallen angel?
Well, the first kind of half of the film is the kind of the whole mystery of it, and it kind of slowly unravels. Hmm. And I quite like the first half of the film because it's all kind of, it's just all atmosphere, and I was just surprised at an intrigue, and I guess I was just surprised at how many times just like it's. Its imagery and the things that were said just kind of got under my skin a little. I guess I just wasn't expecting that kind of like atmospheric horror, I suppose. It kind of like it has moments of like really like heightened violence, for example. And I don't know, it just kind of got under my skin weirdly.
It was creepy.
I thought it was quite effective, yeah.
Oh, he pulled out a corpse and he put it in a what was it, Abby? Snow Angel ship? What did you...
That is one of my problems with the direction of this film, is that he says, "Oh, it looks like a snow angel." I have never seen someone that looks less like a snow angel than that ashy corpse.
Well, it was an ash angel. It was very much the opposite of a snow angel. It was a demon, and it was on fire, and it left a horrible ashy pile. Yeah, Christopher Walken basically sniffs out, literally. Look, there's a bit of sniffing and licking of crime scenes to track down...
His first bloody scene as well. It's like he comes through a door and then zoom to like some dried blood, and then all of a sudden he's there licking it. Like, oh my god.
This very much could have
this
been...
This is what I was waiting for.
Yeah, this could have been a full-on comedy, I think, at times. And he's basically... Christopher Walken as Gabriel, weird side black hair. Like, he's got this black hair. Christopher Walken can be relied upon, looking weird at the best of times. But he has this... hair over his ears is black, and he looks very interesting in this. I think he looks good as like a kind of dark angel thing. And
a bit pasty, perhaps. But yeah,
he's not a human, so that makes sense. I think. But he comes into it being weird, and so he basically can sniff out other angels and is basically tracking down the information and the souls and things, and he burns the corpse ceremoniously with some weird splashing of water, like I don't know if it's holy water or what, but he magically burns up a corpse. The corpse of this first dead angel thing. Then no more investigation can happen because another character I like is the sort of enslaved suicide zombie guy.
Yes,
he looks like a clerk or something, and he's
Jerry was his name.
He's a guy who appears in sitcoms every now and again. I don't know his name.
The actor's name is Adam Goldberg.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. Adam Goldberg is playing this clerk who's committed suicide, but at the last moment, Gabriel brings him back to brings him back from the brink of death as his enslaved zombie, and he's really pissed off about it. He's like, can I just die now? And he's like, no, you must do my bidding. And it's like, I've done your bidding. Can I die now? And it's not on being alive anymore. It feels horrible. No, Dick. Oh, I hate these stupid monkey people. Why did God make them? They're so rubbish. Hey, I'm in the room. Just do my bidding. It's kind of like, it's this really. I like enjoy the depressed guy who's being kept alive to do the bidding of Christopher Walken. And then it happens like later on when the ginger woman from Pulp Fiction is.
There's quite a few people from Pulp Fiction in this, isn't there?
Yeah,
and they would have come out about the same time. Weird. Yeah. Few connections there.
Yeah, I liked her as well. I liked Christopher Walken as a fallen angel type thing, with his zombie servants who have either, like, the woman is in hospital because she's died from some kind of natural cause, and then is brought back to life and forced to sort of drive him around. Like, he uses just about to die people, zombies, as servants to do just manual labor like grave digging and to driving around. Do they explain why Christopher Walken can't just do stuff himself?
Well, he said he couldn't drive.
He hasn't passed his
test.
That
one's fair enough, yeah. I don't know, it's like, if you could, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I guess, if you were a sociopathic angel.
Yes, Anthony, if I was a sociopathic angel, I would ensorcel the corpses of freshly dead people. Oops, the bleepity bloop. Ignore that, it's fine, it's nothing. Yeah, anyway, so I liked that about it. That was definitely. I liked that side of things. The kind of slightly comedic Dark Angel shtick. And I liked the idea of having these henchmen who, when they get bumped off, are like, thanks, I actually wanted to die. This guy was being a right dick, going back on all his promises and stuff, you know.
Yeah, it really. The film really needed kind of the injection of humour at points. Because at a few points, it's a bit po-faced and serious. And lacking a bit of humour. So I'm glad that they had those moments.
You need to in there. There's lots of creepy stuff. I mean, there's stuff that's creepy. Ooh, the imagery, which I didn't think was as effective as when they have tension between adult males and children. They, like, even the good guys, Ginger Simon Man, he is with some young children at one point. We're thinking of him as a messenger on the correct side of good and evil. And he's still like, hey, little kid.
Yeah.
I got a present for you. I'm going to make out with you and pass on the most evil man's soul into your body while I seem... Like, just he just plays the part of a creepy hobo in an abandoned school. And it's like, what the hell is this? It's horrible.
Actually, yeah, the first kind of, like, hour of the film plays out more like a film about child molestation, really.
Yeah. And then Christopher Walken turns up and he's like got some kind of heavenly trumpet that he's like he's sitting with lots of children on his lap, teaching them about weird stuff. And it's just like, do we need another paedophile angel scene, guys? What's going on? Abby, what did you make of this creepiness?
It was really creepy and weird. But you reminded me of something else, which is, I sort of wish this was just about a story of a private investigator who has to look into, what's the name of the crazy military guy that died?
Lieutenant Hawthorne, I think it was, wasn't it?
Looking into him and finding out that he was just this really horrible man.
Oh, he cut off faces and kept them in a box. for unknown reasons and liked staking people, which is also what angels were doing in the Angel Wars or something.
Because my favourite section was when he was in that guy's house and he got out the projector. He was looking at the film. Don't think about the film too much when you watch it, because you think, why have they recorded this? And why does he have it?
Guys, while we're doing this illegal torture, do you want to just film us and I'll stand about vacantly like I don't know how cameras work and I'll incriminate myself and stuff once, you know, whatever. Like, it is weird. And, you know, maybe the investigation should have focused on that and it would have been, I don't know how you could make sense of it. It's quite a weird story anyway. But there's lots of, you know, the path of the detective and Gabriel, like Simon is bumped off at some point. I mean, he's injured at one point and is left dying with only children playing hide and seek to help him. And he befriends a creepy girl, Mary, who's just a kind of curious, was she a Native American kid?
Yeah.
And right. She's just in a school that's, for some reason, mostly abandoned and shut off.
Yeah.
just to be extra weird. And she sort of discovers him, offers to, like, make him French fries or something. And he's like, yeah, I could do with some food, even though we haven't established if angels can eat or whatever. And so she befriends him, or helps him, and he takes advantage by coughing up a soul into her. You're not a very nice good guy. But he's dispatched by Christopher Walken after burned, like, weird torture when he burns him.
That was one of the kind of, like, really visceral moments. Like, there's like, at the end, there's a moment where, like, he got his, like, burned corpse face, and then Christopher Walken, like, rips his heart out, and he just kind of, like, slowly dies. I don't know, that kind of, that got to me. It was just like, that was really creepy and horrible.
There's another weird moment there, that either Gabriel is extra weird and posed the body before he burnt it, or they just had really bad continuity. I don't know.
Well, yeah, like when they discover the ashy corpse of the second person to be burnt.
Yeah.
He changed position into a more fetal position, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, maybe, it's all a bit weird. But the thing is, who's burning him and keeping him alive to torture him for information to find out where he'd hidden the MacGuffin of the soul of the bad guy. But the thing I thought, I'm no angel doctor, but if you burn someone once, I've never done this, all over, they'll have nerve damage. I don't know, maybe angels are different, but you're not going to feel yourself being burnt again. And I'm not sure you can be burnt all over and survive. Like, I don't think you can be kept just alive in that condition and then to be burnt again, and like turned on and off like a human torch. Like, I'm pretty sure it wouldn't hurt after a while. Your nerves are gone, aren't they? Don't think that's a very effective form of torture, is all I'm saying.
I don't know, but I'm guessing Gabriel's probably got previous, so...
Well, he didn't get anywhere with him either. He didn't succeed. Simon got burnt to crisp. Didn't...
Well, that's the thing, Rich. He did fail.
Yeah.
So you're having these qualms. Probably right.
Yeah, there we go. That's the thing. So anyway, the detective is following up leads and befriending the teacher who's in charge of these idiot children who keep hanging out with old people outside their school.
Played by Virginia Madsen, who also was the star of one of our long-lost podcasts, Electric Dreams, if any of you guys remember.
Oh, dear. Oh, yeah. I feel bad for her career.
Maybe one day we'll revisit that, Jim. Maybe we have already, listener, and you can find it in our archive where you found this podcast. Ooh, meta. I mean, there's nothing wrong with her. She played a teacher. I accepted that she could easily be a teacher.
Yeah, and I think it's just the same as the main guy. It's just put these two people next to everyone else in the film and they just come off just a bit bland and boring.
Well, Thomas had really weird good guy hair that looked super fake. I think it was fake. I think it was like a wig because I think he went a bit bald. But like, he looks great bald. He's a balding actor. He looks really interesting in other roles. But in this, he just looked like he was gunning for the lead in a computer game. Like, he just had weird, like, 90s hair that didn't look real. And that kept disturbing me while he tried to babble.
Did anyone also notice? Did anyone else also notice he didn't seem to have the ability to close his mouth?
I didn't.
I sort of did.
Next time you see it, you'll notice that his mouth is just open all the way through.
There were one or two scenes where I was like, will you stop gawping like an idiot?
Yeah.
But I hadn't pegged that it was all the time.
I was too busy noticing all the people perching. Kind of making scenes look weird because they sort of awkwardly are standing on the edge of a table or something. The teacher is brought into the story in a kind of more proactive role. They're sort of investigating the weird occurrence with a kid feeling ill, having an evil man's soul in her. She goes home sick, and they go and find the family who live in like a caravan in the middle of, I don't know, is it Arizona or somewhere? I'm not really sure where we are.
I want to say Castle Rock.
Okay, I don't. Any somewhere in the wilderness in America, near enough to a crappy school. So they kind of track her down and find out that she's not been feeling well, as you wouldn't if such things had happened to you. She's drawing weird pictures, saying creepy stuff, because that's what all good horror films should have, is a kid saying stuff that freaks you out.
Mm-hmm.
And this leads into a weird point I have about the film that it bugs me. It's interesting, but it bugs me. Is in this universe, Catholicism is interchangeable with the magic of Native Americans and their beliefs and religions. And they basically, because it's a Native American family, they're like, oh, we have to get like a, it's maybe it's a curse. Not like there's nothing. The doctor said nothing was wrong, so it must be an evil curse spirit thing. Which they're kind of right, but that you could also get rid of a Catholic god and soul in with Native American ceremonies. And
that was a bit odd, kind of mixing up the kind of beliefs of both of those.
Yeah,
and it doesn't say much. I think there's a bit at the end where Lucifer also kind of prompts them to keep chanting the death ritual or whatever. So there's a little reference that they're all kind of linked. And I suppose the kind of weird, the bullshit speech he gives at the end about faith and
I
souls
hate that speech
whatnot,
with a passion.
Do tell Abby.
Kind of links them all together, but yeah.
I was all right with it. Like, it's when Eric Stoltz is being all mysterious at the start, and then his speech at the end where he's all, maybe faith is about this or that. I just want to reach into the screen and slap him.
Maybe having a soul is about just believing in something and believe in the heart of the cards and it's fine. Not knowing is what it's like to be human. It's like, what the? Like, yeah, I certainly don't know what's going on or what you're talking about.
Yeah, so the whole kind of last 5 minutes of the film are just over the top piling on each other. It's like, oh my god, you have to stop. And it's all a bit rushed towards the end.
Mm.
Which is a bit of a shame because, you know, I'm enjoying the kind of slow atmospheric build up and then it just kind of blows its load at the end, I suppose.
I don't mind having a film that's about like the reality of like religious beliefs coming true. So I don't mind it being about Catholicism being real and angels being a thing. And I wouldn't have minded if it was about Native American curses or, you know, whatever they believe in could have played into the characters in the film. But I don't think you can just go, when you want to get rid of a soul or a demon or anything or a curse, you can have a Buddhist, a monk, you know, like a prophet, you know, you can have anything. Just dump all the religions in. It's all the same thing, isn't it? Catholic mythology. And it's like, no, they're very much different and they don't overlap.
I think maybe the film's trying to play it safe, perhaps, in kind of, well, you know, we are saying that the Christian belief is true, but also maybe, you know, there's room for some other people.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. It's like, is this a Christian film or not, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's already, you know, because it's not like it's a pro-Catholic story. It's about the twisted concepts of angels. I mean, people who are Catholic aren't necessarily on board with all the additions they're adding to the idea of what, like, they're probably a bit offended that they're portraying Gabriel as an evil character.
That's my thing as well. Like, I couldn't describe this film as a Christian movie even, because everyone's a dick.
Yeah.
Every last person is a dick.
So, at the end, they have a large gathering of Native American, possibly family members of the little girl, doing some kind of ritual to get rid of the curse, or the soul, or whatever you want to call it. But they all are completely background characters that react in no way to the scenes. Because a car crashes into the building and into it like an angel, and they are all like, I guess we all don't react, scream, run away. We'll just keep doing our little things. And then, like, Satan turns up and starts eating a heart, and they're all just, let's keep doing it. All Native American ritual soul cleansing ceremonies are like this. We're so used to this kind of insane violence and drama unfolding.
Oh yeah, the devil always shows up.
Yeah, this is how it. That means it's working. Last time we had a rain dance, Satan came and ate a heart. Anyway, I just thought it was a bit weird how they were all there as extras but didn't react. I thought that was an oversight in directing. They could have at least been a bit shocked and then rallied together to say they want to save the kid. I get that. Everyone is so obsessed with this kid who's kind of stupid looking. Like, you know, like she looks... the kid looks normal and is fine, but when she delivers her dialogue, she has this kind of glazed over look in her eyes. Like, you know, she rightly doesn't understand the rubbish she has to spout.
Yeah. The first time she does it, it was quite creepy because you don't really expect it to happen. Mm. But she just kind of keeps doing it. Like, you cut back to her and then it's just this girl talking about the Korean War. And it's like, okay, it's getting a bit weird now.
Yeah, plus there's a part where she has to fight off Christopher Walken along with, like, the teacher and the cop.
Mm.
And she, like, puts a few bullets in his chest. It's like, yep. This kid's been through a lot. Like, I feel sorry for her. But yeah, it's quite weird how we have moments of weird stuff that's about demons and angels and whatever. But we also have exploding caravans and epic fights where people smash through windows or shoot gas canisters and make Christopher Walken explode in a cool way. And then people have conversations with cops going, no, I know he's dead, but you have to handcuff him, trust me. Yeah, mate, like we're going to handcuff a corpse. Like, and then they do, and it still doesn't stop anything. It's like there's lots of weird action movie drama in it as well. Which is very odd. The guys? No? Yeah?
No, you're right.
Fun. It's fun, but it's a bit
weird.
I did like Christopher Walken in a lot of the scenes because he's, like, this, when they're like, early on in the film, he's like getting grave dug up of the evil soldier guy. And I do like him sort of pulling the thing out and like going to like kiss the soul out of him and being like, I can see already there's no soul in his mouth. That's a bit weird. And then he gets up and he's sort of looking and he's like in a deep grave staring around. In lots of the scenes, he behaves in a way that just makes it really funny and creepy at the same time. So there are moments of enjoying. I just get blown away by all the confusing mythology stuff.
That's fair enough. And, yeah, like I was saying, just it's perfect for out-of-context Christopher Walken moments.
Oh, it's really,
just a weird look and a weird line, like, I could smell a graveyard anywhere, kind of stuff like that.
Just pull over, there's a graveyard, let's go. you get, there's a sense of you never know what's going to happen with this guy.
Mm.
And it's almost...
Yeah, he really does play well, like, proper insane, yet intimidating, yet all-knowing...
Yes, if you think about his powers and his motivations, you go, what on earth? But if you just see him as this weird, like, black-haired guy, and I don't know if he wears a trench coat, I feel like he does, just going around with his zombie henchmen, I like him, but I don't care for the main thrust of the concept, because it's so confusing. I don't know. I'm not all on board with the cop who turned away from priesthood, but is now being called upon. And it, like the prophecy was, there'll be a warrior. And I guess a cop is a warrior in Bible times. Like, I didn't even see how it was that much to do with a prophecy. What was the prophecy?
Oh, well, the prophecy was the kind of the new bits added to the end of the Bible, the bits about. Like a war in heaven, a second war in heaven, and needing a soul. So that's all the prophecy.
Ah, there are some interesting bits of the Bible that are like testaments of. I think there's a famous one that's supposed to be an additional book to the Bible. Is the Book of Judas, and it's like a different. It's like adds some different context to Christianity, and there's lots of interesting books that were either cut from the Bible at some point or taken out because various people who were in charge of the countries that distributed Bibles were like, oh, we won't have that in the Bible. You know, there's some really interesting stuff that isn't in the Bible, and it's definitely a wealth of interesting areas to take, you know, these stories from. And I don't know if it really did anything interesting. Like, it kind of muddled together things. We go, I want Satan to be like this, and I want him to disappear into a, like, when Satan goes away he kind of becomes several doves, and it's like, but why does Christopher Walken why is Christopher Walken able to set people on fire? He's an angel, is that a thing? Because he's the angel of death or bad news. I mean I don't think it got the mythology it was basing its ideas on.
No, there's definitely a case of not explaining the rules enough, I suppose.
Or too much, that you go, if you can tell us too much, we can question it and not understand. Mm. Whereas if you just make it simpler, it might have been better as well. Abby, did you have any other things that you liked or disliked about the film, or that maybe something we've glossed over you want to talk about?
I don't think so. No, because it's just the thing for me with this film is that you had some good ideas, but you maybe didn't have enough money or enough time or enough balls. I'm not sure.
You had too many things that could have been good, but they don't mix into a nice tasting broth at the end, do they? It's like doesn't make a good result.
Yeah. I think it's a case of if just one more draft, kind of one more take. And it would have been, like, so much... It had a lot more potential, yeah.
Think about...
I think you're right, guys. I think, like, the kind of story kind of lets it down the most.
Yeah.
But there's some really kind of... just visceral, disturbing moments that kind of stick with me.
See, for me, though, that's just, you know, sugary candy of cinema. Like, the fact that, like, they go, for no reason, basically, the cop and the teacher go into a cave that's where they think Gabriel has been.
Oh, yeah, that was a weird moment.
And there's just all these angel hieroglyphics or writing on the wall, for some reason, and there's a little, I don't know, horrible camp or something in there, and then they have a weird vision of impaled angels in heaven. And then they throw the light that's in the cave at the wall, and it's like, yeah, that was so that all that was to go, okay, we believe in the angels now. That was insane. With no more questioning, is this about angels or is it just a weird homicide story? Like, it was just a cheap way to convey that they believe in angels all of a sudden. And
yeah,
it's kind of it was just like shocking.
You're right. That was one of the weird scenes in the middle where I was kind of confused. It's like, why are they in a cave now with writing? Say, but yeah, the woman, she does kind of come over to his side a little too easily.
Yeah,
you think she'd be slightly more sceptical.
I put that down to small towns are boring.
Yeah, fair enough. That's true, because she is like the choir master as well. She clearly has like lots of time in her hands that she needs to waste.
I get annoyed when people come up with what they think is cool imagery they want to have, but they don't justify it being in the film. They just go, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, this happened, that happened, we have a scene where this unfolds, someone catches fire, someone turns into birds, someone eats a heart, and it's like, well, but why? Why? Like, you're trying to say it's because of war in heaven, but we don't... Why could people, like... kiss souls into each other, and like it doesn't explain why anything. It just goes war in heaven. That's the only thing it goes is war in heaven, and then the Satan comes at the end and goes no. You got it. For some reason there'd be two hells, and I can't have two hells. At least if there's two hells, I'm in charge of both, not you, Gabriel, or whatever you have planned. This is all too vague and confusing.
That's the thing. This film is at its best when it's not bogging itself down with stuff and it's just sort of cracking on.
Yeah.
With what it's already set up.
So I think you know, the things you found interesting about it, Anthony, are the things that are interesting. But it's when you get the explanation for it all, you go, oh, sorry, I'm not buying into this.
No, that's fair enough. I think it's more it. The film surprised me that it would have taken some of this imagery and gone the route that it did. I think maybe I was expecting it to be a bit more straightforward than it was, and just merely because it was a bit different than I thought.
Yeah.
It of a better quality. But no, like I said before, it did come in like a string of similar films.
Yeah, I think Dogma is my favourite of that kind of Catholic myth turned modern, angels and demons war. That's really good, because A, it's funny, and B, it's easier to get, I think. Like, it's about a loophole, and this is just confusing. I don't know what it was about, this film.
Yeah, no, I'd agree Dogma is a superior film. And also there's one, Stigmata, which I quite enjoy from the same time. And, this film does kind of just fall in between the good ones and bad ones. You know, it's got some things going for it, but it's a bit goofy at times, I suppose. A bit weird. Like, it's not terrible, like the Arnold Schwarzenegger End of Days film. So this film, you know, just is snugly in. It's okay, and you know, it's fine with that.
I wouldn't be so kind as to say it's okay, because a lot of the time did feel myself like I do enjoy moments, but not to the extent that I could stomach watching it all again. Like, it was very much a begrudging second watch, because I was like, oh yeah, this bit, what's this, what's going on? Like, I was trying to really get it, and I was frustrated, and I can't sign off on it being an okay, reasonable attempt, because I just didn't like it. But I feel like we've all... I mean, Abby, if you want to say outright I hated it or loved it, feel free. But I feel we're getting to the bit where we come up with a metaphor.
Yeah, I have... It's going to be a difficult one, because I have to come up with a metaphor for something which is just basically... Yeah, I kind of came out in the middle.
Showed some... Well, I believe when we talked initially...
I was a bit mean, yes.
You were like, yeah, it's the shit demon from Dogma. It's a big, stinky pile of shit. It's a horrible abortion. No, you know, it's a disgusting thing. And it's rubbish. But you have to try and...
What's a demon or other related creature? Is it?
What
if
prophet
you, if
is
you know
it?
Any.
It's really hard. I was thinking, what can we say? And it's like, it is the Prophet Muhammad, and then instantly it's the last podcast we do, because we've had a massive like telling off by everyone, because you can't possibly be that.
Oh,
terrible!
I need to look up his name, but bear with me.
Go on.
I have one.
Intriguing.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm really struggling, because how do you pick the right? It's a slightly lame, underdeveloped demon from the Book of Matthew. He mentions the angel crab claw, an angel that is designed to make stupid stories up and do the bidding of God.
Maybe something bear with me, it's like the Antichrist, but like just as they're born, so they're still like a baby.
Before it becomes fully the Jesus equivalent of Satan.
Oh, yeah, so everyone's still crap in their pants about it, but really, it's just a baby.
Satos, Dominus. Oh, he's so cute.
Yeah. But yeah, something just kind of in the middle. It's like it's supposed to be like the evil end of the world, but it's a baby, so it's still kind of cute and nice.
The pre-pubescent Damien.
Yes.
It's just sort of finding his feet, learning how to be horrid, but still funny at times. Okay. Abby, have you got your one yet?
Yeah. In Ghost Rider, there's a demon called Blackheart.
Ghost Rider.
Which is the devil's son, and he's on Bentara shape. I can't even remember why, but he's on, hey! And he is this right thing, because he has an excellent idea for a character. But the execution is just so... Every now and again he has these good moments, but then the rest of the time you're like, it's ultimately ineffectual. So okay. that's my pick. It's Blackheart from Ghost Rider. The film specifically. He might be a lot better in the comics, I don't.
We don't know. Your only reference point is some of the worst Nicolas Cage movies. I'll accept it. That's fine. I don't know. I haven't got any reference points really. I just go, it's a bit like certain parts of the Bible. I couldn't make any sense out of it and found it generally frustrating and confusing.
What's the name of Jason Lee's demon in Dogma?
Jason Lee. Is he a demon? Or is he a prophet?
Something like Azrael.
Oh, no, he's got...
He's
got little horns, isn't he?
Yes, that's right. He's a demon, and Chris Rock is like a prophet or something.
Does that help?
It's a good film. It's making me want to watch Dogma more. It's really like some cracking moments in Dogma.
Azrael.
It is the very dogma of religion. It's all too much... and confusing. Like, pick some simple ideas. Don't confuse me with weird demons and angels and wars.
Actually, it's like if you took Dogma and took out all the jokes.
Yeah, that's true.
They are remarkably similar. Yeah.
So, the prophecy. Dogma without jokes. Does that grab you? Maybe it does.
Well, less. A lot less.
It is funny. It's still funny. Like, I got to give it to the prophecy. It had me smiling at certain ideas, and mainly the zombie servants were great. That was the thing. I was like, this is good. I kind of understand the idea of that, like catching someone at the edge of their life and enslaving them, and it played out to a kind of amusing ends. So some good came out of this terrible prophecy. So, I prophesize next time we will review a different film and have a probably similar opinion. It was kind of mixed tone, every spoiler film is. There was some good and some bad, because we always talk about mediocrity. Never the greats and never the superb lows. Always the, what the hell is this anyways?
What happened?
It was almost good, but then it was bad. So that's my prophecy. But otherwise, I prophesize you guys are going to say goodbye just after me. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Prophecy correct. Didn't even have to edit it so it was true.